Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus free home delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
What's up?
And I'm Jay Clone, 1977.
1977.
Yep.
It's a good year.
It was. Not no more, though. Not no more.
What happened in 1977?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But just use your imagination.
Yeah.
Looking back, you know, I don't know.
Welcome back to part two of Mr. E mispronouncing African words.
Ooh, that'll be fun. Ooh, but don't forget about coming up, Arkansas Cryptid Fest.
We need to put the tickets down below for that.
Yes, and the links below. So check in the description box. Come see us speak in down at Old Bart's, Little North Rock.
North Little Rock.
Sound like me. I know, I always mess up towns and whatnot. It's been a while since I've had the Atlas open, checking out my road maps.
North Little Rock. Which is north of Little Rock.
Old Bart's. I forgot. I always mess up the dates, too.
June 6th.
That's right. The first weekend of June. So come see us speak live with other special guest speakers there as well, hosted by Drunken Cryptids' Matthew Orton.
Yeah, and then we have a live show with Believing in the Bizarre.
Yep, coming up June 13th and following weekend in our hometown.
Is it the following weekend?
I think so. June 13th, right?
Sure.
Yeah, so June 6th, June 13th. So we got shows back to back to back to back. And then, that's in our hometown, Ada, Ohio, at the Inn, at Ohio Northern University. It's a very nice venue. They have their own restaurant and bar we'll have access to. So, and you can stay there. You can stay the night right there at the venue. How's it get any better than that? So come see us live June 13th. Tickets in the links below. Yeah,
that's your job. So now you got to put tickets below.
Well, I don't know. I was going to do the Jeb thing.
So what do you remember from the Jungle Walrus?
You asked me really fast. You know, I might need a little refresher.
Basically, there was a pictograph from Africa.
Oh, yes, yes.
With some other monsters.
Walrus-like
entities. Where it had a long paddled tail.
But it had the four legs, right? It
had four stubby legs.
Yeah.
And then a small head and big tusk. It was rotund. Dozens of tribes or peoples of Africa have stories and different names for the same creature.
Mm-hmm.
Some describing it more cat-like. Some describing it more like otters, or at least the one guy that shot a giant river otter.
Yeah.
Thought that was the creature. And some give it a more reptilian appearance, and some give it much more of like the marine mammal appearance.
Okay.
But yeah, it's all over basically the Congo, Central Africa, wherever the rainforest is, there's stories of this creature.
Okay. I just seen a thing this weekend, a documentary. I was like, you know, the BBC nature documentaries, you know, David Attenborough stuff. And well, I just looked it up now. It was frogfish. They were talking about the frogfish at the bottom of the ocean. And I don't, when you were describing it, it just reminded me of that a little bit. I know they don't look nothing like them, but it has like the four flippers that turn into almost like nubby legs.
Two.
Is it two? Just the two modified? And I don't know. It was pretty neat.
Tripod fish are another cool one.
Mmm. Tripod fish. I haven't seen them yet.
They walk on stilts.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So yeah, let's talk about some of the DRC's southern regions. Encountered more reports of similar creatures known variously from Simbi Ya Mini, Nutu Yi Mini, Nabu Wi Lu, all of which translate roughly to water lions. Well, again, that's another theme. Where is it? Well, when we talked about this last time too, are they using lion as an association with the predatory behaviors?
Right.
Or are they using the word lion as a representation of what the creature looks like?
Right, yeah.
So that's kind of the two ways of thinking with the naming conventions of these people. And I really, I don't know. Some of these people seem to describe it much more like a felid. So like we were talking about like the aquatic saber-tooth cat theory. And much more, some people just, you know, kind of describe it as just being very, very ferocious.
Yeah, like a lion.
Yeah. Yeah, further mysterious beasts also appear belonging to the same type, including the Kenyan Omali and the Sudanese Yino Kaduni.
What are you talking about messing up any of the words? I think you're nailing them.
Our African listeners are much more polite than some other people where they're just like close enough.
Yeah.
Ice is falling off the house because it's 50 degrees.
The sun came out today. I seen it.
From descriptions and native nomenclatures, a feline identity seems probable for these creatures. And, where was I? Form their formidable upper canines of undiscovered modern-day species of saber-toothed cat. That's probably been proposed by some cryptozoologists. Although the fossil records, at least of all African saber-tooths, had vanished before the Pleistocene closed, which was only around 11,000 years ago. Moreover, the existence of an aquatic saber-tooth is a very bizarre concept. Certainly, there is very little to no evidence of fossil findings that suggest that any extinct Machaerodontid, which is the saber-toothed cat family, ever became adapted for even a partially aquatic lifestyle. And we could talk about that. I have a little section more about them, with them being aquatic.
Okay.
It just, I mean, what do you think of a saber-toothed cat when you hear that talked about?
I mean, just being like aquatic, like an aquatic one?
Just a saber-toothed cat. Like, what do you picture when you picture a saber-toothed cat?
I mean, obviously the big old cartoon style fangs.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the big thing. But I always think of them as bigger than the typical big cats we have today. You know, the cheetahs and leopards and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I just imagine they were a lot bigger.
I think they were, most of them are like roughly the size of like tigers, but they're much more bulky.
Okay,
if you really thicker. Look at them, they're more built like a bear.
Like the two C's thick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where they have high shoulders. Like, they were designed to hunt and wrestle extremely large prey items.
Ooh.
So that's actually a thought of why the saber-toothed cats went extinct, especially in North and South America, is that most of the large megafaunal animals that they were hunting disappeared.
Right, yeah.
The ones that were left were just monsters, so it was just too hard, you know, for them to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And smaller predators appeared with them.
Like cave lions.
Well, I'm no, even smaller, like wolves.
Oh, okay.
Coyotes. Where deer, let's say, you know, deer, elk, moose, the, you know, the megafauna that were left were much faster.
Right.
A lot of the animals they were hunting.
Right.
And they're much more timid. So when you're looking at like mastodons and mammoths and ground sloths and the other big megafauna stuff that the saber-toothed cats were specialized in hunting, and specialized animals are always the first one to go. Like, in any time in environmental change, specialized animals are the ones that go, generalists are the ones that survive.
Mm-hmm.
So they lived and they hung on a lot longer than a lot of the megafauna did. But we can see in the fossil record their numbers steadily dropping. And we think it's kind of a multifaceted thing where it was, you know, the prey density changed, moved towards much more smaller, fast prey, much more skittish prey.
So their niche changed, kind
of. The food availability changed. And then moving in of smaller predators.
Mm-hmm.
So they just could not compete.
Right.
They're, and even like modern day mountain lions were around with them, which are a smaller felid comparative to a saber tooth that was much more, you know, just in the trees hunting. You know, they would drop down and grab elk and stuff like that. So they would ambush rather than, you know, pursue and wrestle.
Just chase, yeah, wrestle down and that's what, I mean, conquer.
If you look at a saber tooth's muscular and, you know, skeletal frame, that's what they are made to do.
They're mesomorphic.
They were made to grab something by the throat, sever the windpipe, and just sit there and hold it until it died.
Gosh. I want to see, like, where's Colossal Bioscience at? Let's bring back some saber tooths and then watch some Russians, you know, wrestle them like they do the bears. Oh, yeah.
Put gloves and a muzzle on them.
Just grab them by their teeth and wrestle them down.
So actually, their teeth were very fragile.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's several saber-tooth skulls we have with chipped teeth or broke-off teeth.
Huh.
The only thing is because they hit the spinal column.
Oh.
So it was made to just go through soft flesh.
Yeah. Just to sever, huh?
Yeah. And if you look at what like how they're designed, that makes a lot of sense. Like, if you look at an animal like a T-Rex or a sperm whale, that has robust, like the
conical other largest teeth.
Yeah. Where they're huge. They're stocky.
Oh, yeah.
They have giant roots.
Crush is what
they
do.
They have to.
Yeah.
Where this has more like sabers, like blades. So, I mean, think about it like a razor blade, how easily you can break it from sideways pressure.
Oh, yeah.
So it's more like that, where they were made to go through soft flesh, but if they had to bite, if they hit a bone on accident, they'd probably chip or break a tooth.
Which, oh, yeah.
If they weren't hurt, or if they weren't pack animals, would be the death of them.
Or you get, you know, some what are those bludgeoning bones called? Like the walrus skeletal bones that they use to beat baby seals with. Smack a saber tooth with one of them, snap their teeth right off.
Walrus? What'd you just say?
What are they called? What are they the bones that they get out of the walruses that they
beat
the baby seals with?
I don't know the actual name. It's the penis bone.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at. You swing a walrus penis bone at a saber tooth, that'll shatter its teeth.
Okay.
The ultimate defense weapon back
in the
day.
They have a big spike on them.
See?
No, they're like if you hit somebody with that, you would kill them.
Back in the day, that was the original Morning Star.
One of my college professors is part Native Alaskan.
Yeah.
And he had one because they would use it for salmon.
Gosh.
And halibut when they were fishing.
That'd be a great trophy piece.
It was scary. Like, because they're huge. And they got like this horn on them.
Gosh.
Which is where the muscles attach.
Rough.
But if you just swung it at somebody, it would just stick in their head like an axe.
Yeah. But anyway, listeners out there can get us access to a couple of those. We would gladly.
That is a crime.
Take them. Oh, is it?
Yes.
Well, how'd they have them?
Native Alaskans.
Right. That's Native Alaskan listeners.
So they can't give them to us.
They can't gift them?
No.
As from the tribe?
No.
I don't know. That'd be neat.
I do not believe so, because there's...
Well, I want one, dang it. Maybe the one will pop up on Facebook Market.
So, following from a forum of Kindenberg's earlier suggestions, in the book Les Drunes Dragons de Africa in 1978, and Lise Fanlin Encounters Incognos de Africa in 2007, veteran French cryptozoologist Dr. Bernard Heuvelmann asserted that it was not only possible... But was his mind more likely that the principal argument is following that it was a saber-tooth or was a saber-tooth cat? Despite popular belief, many cats, especially large cats, are not afraid of water, is one of his main thoughts. So, like tigers, for example, tigers are very, very aquatic. Whether they don't really hunt in the water per se, but they're not afraid to swim.
Yeah,
they're not afraid to cross rivers. They're not afraid to get into lakes. Lions can swim. They don't like to, and it's because of the other animals they occupy with, like crocodiles.
Okay, they don't want
to
deal
with them. The only time that they can really become prey to crocodiles is being in the water.
That's true, yeah.
Or hippos.
Yeah.
You know, and then you look at, like, jaguars from South America.
They'll jump right in.
They hunt.
Alligators and...
Caiman, but...
Oh, okay. Crocodiles?
Caiman.
Oh, okay. I can't think of any other ones.
Gharials would be...
Gharials?
No, Caiman.
Oh, okay.
So there's... Crocodiles, alligators, caiman, gharials, false gharials.
Oh, yeah, the false gharials. I know we covered these on an episode.
I think that's the...
Oh, and oceanic crocs.
Well, I think they'd probably fall into crocodiles.
Oh, well, I didn't know if it was like a gharial, false gharial type deal.
But so saying that maybe the saber tooth, let's say this is a saber tooth, or Bernard Hulman's thought this is a saber tooth, when prey started becoming their megafaunal prey, started becoming more harder to come by, and they were competing with other African predators Like, and so you think about the cats in Africa, for example, or the even the canids in Africa. They're all pack or pride animals.
Okay.
So lions hunt in groups. Hyenas hunt in groups. African painted dogs hunt in groups. So we don't think saber-tooths did, and if they did, they were very low numbers.
Okay.
Much more like a bobcat or a mountain lion or a tiger.
Solitary hunters.
That, or maybe a mom with her cubs, like a couple-year-old cubs, like teaching them that kind of stuff. But yeah, not very. So is this an adaptation for limiting prey reserves and or competition pressures?
Hmm.
So during the end of the Holocene, when all these big animals are disappearing, and the big animals that were left are fast, giant herds are very intelligent, like elephants.
Yeah.
You know, it's really hard to get in and kill a baby elephant because there's 10-ton elephants are surrounding it.
Yeah, exactly.
So even if you get in and grab that baby elephant and sit there to hold it and suffocate it, you think mom's just going to stand there?
Yeah.
And they're going to crush you to death. They're going to come in and just punt you until you're flat.
Yeah. Which I've seen that before.
Yeah.
That's scary.
So that's one of the thoughts. Is
punt you. I know it. It's true. Punt you is correct.
I've seen him punt.
I know. It's just scary because it's a 10,000-pound animal, like you said. Just poof.
I seen them punt a water buffalo one time.
Like,
and you got to realize that's bigger than any cow you see.
Yeah, but
and it goes flying.
It looks like someone kicking a house cat around. Yeah. You know, like Monty Python style.
Mm-hmm. So that's one of his big thought or his arguments right there. Why he believes it is a saber-tooth felid. Number two, it's very effective utilization by walruses of their own huge upper canines is for anchorage and or dragging themselves onto land and ice flows. When plunging up on the seabed sediments in search of modest-sized prey demonstrates that saber-tooth elongated canines would be great benefit to some aquatic existences. So this basically what he's getting at is that they could be using their canine or their teeth to hold onto the river bottoms, to move around, to move through current, to even maybe find fish and stuff like that, like lungfish in Africa and like turtles and, you know.
Stirring them up.
Yeah, you know, here's my problem with this. And once again, this is Bernard Hoovelman's ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the sensitivity of the canids? So if you look at a walrus's tusk, their true tusk.
Okay.
They are anchored very heavily.
Okay.
They are designed. They're very thick. They're very round. They are designed to hold the walrus's weight.
Do they really like use them as like ice spikes and pull themselves up? Okay. I didn't know that.
That's what their primary focus is for. That's why. Mm. So they're not sexual. Because if you look at it, both males and females have tusks.
Have them, yeah. I think we covered that
on
a Freaky Fauna Friday episode.
I think we did it when we've used walruses, talked about walruses before.
Yeah.
So this could be that there's that thought that maybe they adapted and got a little stronger, or they're not growing as long. They're doing this. That's my big thing against it, is that the saber teeth of like a Homotherium or a saber tooth cat or anything like that are very, very different than a tusk.
Right.
Like if you like animals with tusk, you look at a hippo or an elephant or a walrus, they are deep anchored. They are designed to hold weight. They are round. They are thick. Like they're built like trees.
Yeah.
Saber-toothed cat or homotheriums were built like sabers. They're built like swords.
Yeah.
And they were designed for cutting and shearing.
Hmm.
So that's just my big pushback is that it's, yes, fundamentally on the outside, it looks similar to like a walrus's tusk.
But when you get down to the nitty gritty.
They're very, very different things.
When you break down the nuts and bolts.
But that's my personal opinions. Conservatively, on land, such teeth would surely be a great handicap for the saber tooth that was attempting to tear off and devour pieces of meat of its prey. And this has been, that's Bernard Hoovelman's third point. And this has been a thought for a long time, is that the saber teeth were such a hindrance when it came to actually eating.
Okay.
That once again, these would highly, highly specialized animals for very certain like large preys and stuff like that.
Right.
That how would they eat, you know, basically like these saber teeth are taking up a lot of their front face. But yeah, so it would make more sense that they would be eating small stuff according to Bernard Hoovelman in the water. Number four for him, due to the size of their saber teeth, would have fairly bad in comprehension to the true fields of comparable size, lions and leopards. but ultimately may be forced to move them into ecological niches unoccupied by such cats, mainly remote mountain ranges and aquatic realms. So we talked about this. We actually talked about the saber-toothed cat from Africa in a previous episode that's in the mountain ranges in the south. Okay. The Kaiser tiger, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
Where just like literally the native African people are drawing like a classic Homo therium.
Yeah. The big, it's just like a big.
It's just a saber cat.
Mountain cat with saber teeth. Yeah.
Looks like a big bobcat.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of what we were talking about earlier, that these cats, due to lack of prey and new competition, could have been pushed into such things. Now, I want you to think back, and one of the benefits to this is, what have I really sold you on with saber-toothed cats? Is they were designed to hunt what?
Big prey. Megafauna.
What was the Congo or the jungle walrus said to attack very often?
Oh boy. Hippos?
Hippos.
Yeah.
Which have been appropriate prey sized, even though they're much smaller. You know, walruses or the jungle walrus is much smaller than the hippo. If they were a saber-toothed cat, that would have been an appropriate prey size.
Like punching above their weight class?
Yeah, that's what they did.
Yeah.
They hunted megafauna.
Yeah.
And what was described was they would get on the back of the hippo and bite the neck and hang on.
Mm.
They could be going to sever the spinal cord or just basically bleed them out.
Yeah, it cuts arteries. Because, yeah. I mean, all the vitals are in their neck. I don't care what creature you are.
Or on top of the hippo and like rodeoing it, you know, yeah. Holding on with their face.
Like the only person thing they couldn't get was that guy with that no neck, the big shoulders, you know what I'm talking about? Like a meme of him that always goes around.
I always think of that lady.
Lady?
There's a lady that has no neck and she's like, he grabbed me by the throat. And everybody comments,
like,
liar.
Wait a minute. Yeah, that's what the one guy is like, you can't choke him out.
So that is a thought that these guys are said to really, really attack hippos. So that would be a megafauna. A megafauna that is abundant,
yes.
That is not really being preyed upon by the other predators of Africa.
Mm.
So this could have pushed them to a more aquatic lifestyle of chasing the prey into the water.
Yeah. And hippos, I mean, they don't swim. Well, they don't swim. They basically run across the bottom and they're not as mobile. Now, when they get on land, they can scoot and it's scary.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I can see, you know, if you got an aquatic cat that, you know, is comfortable in the water, taking out hippos in the water, especially if you got the big fangs to pierce through it.
Mm-hmm. Hulman also believes that the saber-toothed cat could exist very readily in an aquatic environment simply by paralleling the walrus's lifestyle. Moreover, it's challenged by the potential rivals such as elephants, hippos, and saber-tooths would be more amply equipped to dispose of these megafaunal creatures. They could even drink the blood squirting from their vanquished opponent's neck. Some authorities believe that the fossil terrestrial saber-toothed cats were themselves sangviverous blood drinkers.
Okay.
Its carcass could serve as a food source too, for it dragged underwater by the saber-toothed and allow it to decompose. The carcass's meat would eventually soften, enabling it to be torn off into pieces more easily to be devoured by the saber-toothed, like a crocodile does. Therefore, canceling out the problems in the field might otherwise experience due to these cumbersome canines.
All right. Cumbersome canines. I like that.
So that's one thought. What do you think of that?
Now, is this still the...
That's Bernard's thought.
I was just going to say, still under Bernard's...
Yeah, and I'm not... Obviously, Bernard Hulman is the father
cryptozoology.
And what do I know compared to him? But I have some pushback on this theory. I think he has some really, really good points.
Mm-hmm.
I do have some pushback, though. But what you go ahead first.
Well, I think that's important, too, because we need pushback. Everything needs a little bit of pushback, because that's how you explore
and Bernard,
ideas.
I think the kind of zoologist he was would appreciate that.
Absolutely. Because, I don't know, I think anyone seeking the truth, if you make, like, a point that pushes back, and it's like, okay, anyone with any common sense that wants the truth, they're going to accept things that that don't jive with their theory, you know what I mean? But that's called learning and growth, and that's how we learn and grow and get to new places and learn new things. And we're not stuck in the box that they keep us in all the time. So yes, pushback is important, but I think that also comes with time and knowledge and learning and having different perspectives, being having access to information like this and creatures and animals like this, because if it weren't for like a biologist like yourself that is able to look at this through a lens that where you've observed animals in the wild, you know, you've went out and discovered them, you found them, but having a more modern look, because as we discover and learn about more and more animals, we're cataloging more and more information about them and characteristics and breaking down the genomes and whatnot, you know. So that stuff Bernard Hoovelman didn't have all the access to, but he was still.
He didn't die that long ago, but yeah.
But I mean, when he was at the height, you know, of discovering all this.
No, and I mean, yeah.
Putting out all the information for people to have access to this stuff and to open their minds about what's actually out there in the world. Because, you know, after World War I, World War II, I imagine a lot of the civilized world was pretty distracted with things, you know? So you're not really looking into this stuff, depending on what your notebooks, your school is giving you to learn from. I don't know. It's important for pioneers like him to, I guess, make these discoveries and get the curiosity going in the world. So we, just like us now, revisiting it, I don't know how many decades later.
This book was 2007 about this.
Is when it published? Mm-hmm. Oh, it's only 20 years ago? Bernard Hoovelman? But it had to be old work, right?
So it was republished because he died in 2001.
I was going to say.
It was something he wrote probably in the 70s by the looks. I'm looking at the book now.
Okay.
And then somebody basically owned the estate later and got it republished.
Which is awesome. But, I mean, good on him for...
He died at 84, 2001.
Oh, wow. So he lived quite a long time.
For all the stuff he did?
Yeah.
Oh, it was republished in English then. Sorry. That's what it was. Okay.
Oh, it was written in that...
because he's Belgian French.
Yeah, so at least he's gotten in a language that the world can understand. Because that French language, you need three different ways to translate it to get to the right thing, to understand what they're even talking about.
Man, you're mean.
I'm sorry. I just like picking on the French. It's because we like the French so much. That's why we pick on them. Because we just like them so much.
I would love a baguette right now. So one more is the Kenyan dingonick, which is often referred to as the general jungle walrus, but it's another localized name for one. An aquatic beast of generally feline appearance, familiar to the Wa Nuburi tribe. Allegedly once shot by adventurer John Alfred Jordan during his early 20th century Kenyan expedition, which is highly exclusive, but exaggeratedly daunting dingonick, in his opinion, of Hoovelman's, another possessive member of the Aquatic Sabretooth Association. Its fangs were huge, and its body was long and wide as a hippo's. Its tail is lengthy and broad, and it swings gently against the river currents where the animal is in the water. It has four short, stubby legs, and its feet were that as big as a hippo's, but it had bear-like claws like that of a crocodile.
Okay.
So, kind of cat-like, but huge. Big, flat tail that was just going to gently swing in the water. Short, stubby legs that were kind of like a hippo's. They were as big as a hippo's, but still had crocodile-like claws on them.
Yeah.
Does that make you think of any animal?
Komodo dragon?
Okay.
I don't know.
Truly, it possessed one feature that was initially seemed to be excluded from the field identity, namely a body covered in
fur?
Scales.
Okay. Oh, I was going to say salamander, giant salamander.
Salamanders don't have scales.
Oh, they don't. You're right. Okay, so back to the Komodo dragon.
Hoovelman, however, considered this more likely to be merely optical illusions produced by the shining light on a particularly reflective plumage.
Oh, back to the salamander again.
And one that often bears tufts of hair adhered together often results that submerged animals looking like scales.
Yeah, back off the salamander then.
But that's Hoovelman, not me.
Right.
Having said the description of the alleged first-hand encounter of the dingonick, 1905, documented by the book Elephants and Ivory, The Tales of Hunting Adventure, 1956. Jordan seemed to be very empathetic, but the creature was genuinely scaled. So here's a quote from the book about this.
Okay.
I slid down the bank to go to get cover from the bushes, and there it was. It was midstream, about 30 feet from me. A beast fish, a creature from my nightmares. It was about 15 to 18 feet in length, with an extremely massive head. Not the head like that of a crocodile's, but flat skull and round. It was two yellow fangs dropping from its upper jaw, and its back was as broad as that of a hippo's. But it was scaled, and it was beautifully overlapping plates, as smooth and intricate as those seen in the old Arabian cruises. The sunlight fell on those wet scales. It was dappled by the leaves. They made it seem so brilliantly colored, like that of a leopard's coat. It was something of every animal in it. It was an impossibility. There was a broad tail that was swinging gently against the current, keeping it midstream, keeping it stationary, whatever it was. So the tail is just going, this is me talking, is just going fast enough to keep it where it is.
Right. So it's almost like it's staying still in the water.
Yeah. Yeah. It wanted to stay right there for whatever reason.
Swimming against the stream or whatever. Yeah.
At last, I took aim on it. I aimed my .303 at the base of the neck and gave it a solid round. I saw the bullet hit, and I heard the way you do of a short range. The beast turned in great fury of yellow water until it was facing the bank and my cover. It leaped into the air until it was standing, or so it seemed. Its pale belly scaled vividly, 10 or 12 feet to the end. Jordan and his native helper, this is a quote in the book, helper, fled through the forest for about 300 yards before halting. By the time the curiosity returned to the river, it had gone. But a spool of what all over the soft mud, huge prints the size of a hippo's, but clawed and webbed. Some wanderlous told me, well, that's a people, told me that they knew of this thing. And they called it the dinganeck. The Carvados knew of it too. And they had one of them made a god out of it, who was called Libertas. They were worried that they had heard a white man had shot the Libertas. Yeah, that's not good. They said they now were all going to die of sleep sickness thanks to this. And true, there was an epidemic among these people a year later.
Mm. So what is this thing more? Is it animal or is it more water spirit?
He draws it much more like a giant reptile with some mammalian characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Jordan, noticing that his considerable bad luck or killing the dinganeck, echoes the belief that also prevailing concerning the Congo's equivalent mysterious beast, the Nababu. Basically, they also say killing one is extremely bad. But you think about that, Mokele and Bembe has a lot of that legend too.
Yeah, I was going to ask if they mentioned how many toes were on the clawed tracks.
Five.
Ooh, an odd toad.
Not Mokele either.
Yeah, because Mokele was three-toed.
Was it?
Yes, three-toed tracks. They're in the Congo. That's my jab voice.
At much of the same time as Jordan's sighting, another hunter said it spied a dinganeck floating on a log down the Mara River. While the high flood, but it was quickly slidden off into the water. Near Kenya's Amlo River, they called the Omali, sometimes see it laying out on the sand sunning itself. But if disturbed, it'll splash back into the water at once, smurved until nothing remains above the surface. Jordan also documented his dinganeck encounter in his later book, The Elephant Stone. And that's where he emphasized the fangs and scales. He says this again. At 15 to 18 feet long, it had a massive head, shaped like that of an otter, with two large fangs, as thick as a walrus teeth. Descending from the upper jaw, its back was as wide as a male's hippo's, yet scaled distinctly, like that of an armadillo.
Mm.
I thought I could see my way with the Lubada, the native helper, but he spoke of a leopard's body, for the light reflected off the scales of the cat's color. And idly it swatched back and forth its broad tail.
Okay. Interesting.
Is it?
Kind of. I mean, at first I was thinking like some kind of fish. And now, then Komodo dragon, then we're back to a salamander again, and I'm just laying on no, it's not salamander.
You can't think of any giant, five-clawed, armor-plated mammal?
Mammal?
Scaled like this?
A pangolin?
giant aquatic pangolin.
Was that such a thing?
Maybe.
A pangolin. I don't know.
I will tell you, the scales, a lot of the scale, the people that draw it scaled, draw it like it pangolin scales.
Huh. So are you hinting it could be that? Or?
We'll talk about that.
Okay. Well, maybe we should, before we talk about it, really give in to our...
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I think I want to do one of the buttons.
I think you should just do it.
No, I like the buttons. Let's do one. An ad from our sponsor, Flavors of the Forest, Bigfoot Breath. Welcome back to Cooking with J-Clone 77. And we're back again on a new episode with my guest chef, the Defiance Dogman.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, okay, Defiance Dogman. Today, you're preparing a special dish. What do you got for us today?
Lamb chops.
Ah, some roasted lamb chops. Oh, now, you said today you brought a secret ingredient. What was that you brought with us today? Oh, spicy Bigfoot breath. Raw garlic dust from Flavors of the Forest?
Yeah, best thing.
Ah, let me sprinkle a little bit on my lamb chop here that you prepared. Oh, my goodness. This flavor profile went from a 10 to an 11.
That means you go...
Couldn't have said it better myself, Mr. Dogman. And you can find this. You can get your own bottles of Flavors of the Forest raw, spicy garlic dust, raw garlic dust, spicy garlic dust, Bigfoot breath. It's all delicious and packed full of garlic, delicious flavor that you can't get anywhere else. You can get it at flavorsforest.com/corn. I'm clone 1977. That was clone 77. Synchronicities.
In much earlier accounts of the Dingo Neck sighting, moreover, given to him by a London Daily Mail newspaper reporter almost 40 years before his own book was published, Jordan specifically stated that the creature had two fangs. They were walrus reporting from its mouth, and the body was shaped like that of a hippo, but scaled. However, after stating that he fired at it, Jordan also claimed further observation were cut short by the animal charging at us, and went on to say that he returned to the area the next day. Needless to say, the claims were directly contradicting Jordan's accounts in his two books. So that's just basically saying, take that as it is.
Take it as it is.
So let's get into what the dingoneck, or the African jungle walrus, could be.
Could be.
Yeah, you have some thoughts before I get into my list. Why don't you go ahead?
Well, what'd you say, giant? Well, that's just for that one specifically, the pangolin thing.
No, overall, what is this creature?
This creature, I don't want to just tell everyone then ruin the show.
No, I mean, it's time.
Right, it's this creature actually is, you heard it here first. No, I don't know. It's not a giant salamander. I'm going to mark that one off the list.
Why not? Why?
Because it just can't be. I don't know. It just isn't. I don't know. I mean, it'd be fun, but I just don't think it is. We talked about in a couple weeks ago that what was that one weird four-legged tusked
ambulos? Or no, ambulos. It wasn't tusked.
Well, what am I thinking of?
That was the walking whale.
The walking whale. That's what it was. The wolf whale hybrid.
Yeah.
That's what we talked about. Occlute. Occlute was the episode.
Yeah.
But we discussed that.
I have Ambulocetus on here, just so you know.
We discussed that one.
Let's talk about that before we continue. Because I have a couple that there's just not a lot on them. And we already went heavy into the Ambulocetus on that episode.
Yeah. So go back to the Occlute episode.
So as far as I could find, no Ambulocetus had fangs. None were armor plated. None had longer necks. A lot of these show like... Not long, long necks, but like the Ambulocetus' head was like on its shoulders because, I mean, it looked like a whale with legs.
Okay.
A big whale.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it couldn't have really big canines. I think the behavior is off. I just don't think it's an Ambulocetus, but I think, you know, there's enough there to put it on the list. For its aggressiveness and its hunting of large megafauna, Ambulocetus, a lot of those early whales were hunting animals smaller than themselves. So it's really hard to switch to go just hunting animals larger than yourself.
To something smaller and faster.
Yeah. So you're designed, you're normally designed for one or the other.
Yeah.
Or you have different in your life. So like a T-Rex going back way, way back.
Or like a tiger shark.
There you go.
A little foreshadowing for Freaky Fauna Friday.
Yeah, so I really don't think it's Ambulocetus. I just don't think it fits that. Now, a lot of the early legged whales really don't fit that kind of motif. Like
behavior.
When you get to like blesmosaurs, so the crocodile whales.
Oh, okay. Where, yeah, I don't know.
They were the ones that... Why they're called blesmosaurs is they thought they were dinosaurs first because they have a more reptilian appearance to them. But they were just, they were giant early whales.
Okay.
They were monsters, though. So, yeah, Ambulocetus. You got any other ones before I start going? You had some thoughts.
Let's see here. The big old cats.
The giant pangolin.
Yeah, the giant pangolin.
I have that written.
I mean, the scales and stuff. But
so, I could not find in the fossil record a pangolin that it was even close.
To big?
To this, like yeah, in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But I like the idea because there's a lot of artists in early depictions that kind of give it that kind of scale.
Well, do they even have that type of behavior either?
None of the living ones do because they're basically anteaters.
That's what I thought.
Not so saying they couldn't.
I don't think they're hippo killers. That'd be quite the difference.
It'd be interesting.
But a big cat, though, like... You know what? Homotherium? Was that the...
So do you want to do that? So I got Homotherium written down specifically.
I mean, that could be one that fits the bill just because it's a big, bulky cat that could probably take down some big animals.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I have another one that wasn't on... We'll talk about Homotherium in a minute, but it's on towards the bottom of my list.
Okay.
Saber-toothed otters.
Ooh, okay. Now we're on to something.
Now, I couldn't find a true saber-toothed otter, but there are several giant species of otters specifically in Africa.
Okay.
And I mean lion-sized.
That's big.
But they didn't have, as far as I could find, any like saber teeth.
Okay.
But they were mean, and we don't really, they're one of those animals that disappeared during like the Pleistocene that we really don't know why.
Okay.
One of the odd extinction events.
Maybe they just changed into something else.
Well, that I think it's just, they have pulled back into a range where there just wasn't a lot of people in and then there are these monsters that live in the jungle. Because it shows, like, they were competing with a lot of the Pleistocene megafauna, like saber-toothed cats.
Well, if they're apex predators, too, there's not going to be many of them around.
Yeah. So they were directly competing with a lot of the big guys. And maybe, like, Homotherium, they lost.
Okay.
And they, you know, retreated back into more environments they can control.
Maybe that shrank their size down and...
Or I think they may have gotten bigger in just less numbers.
Okay. I was thinking maybe they just turn into the otters we know of today, where smaller size and more abundant.
I'm talking about this creature being a giant otter because it's huge.
Yeah. Big, deadly, aggressive thing.
I mean, otters are scary right now.
Yeah. And for their size,
they will
kill
you.
Yeah.
Giant river otters will kill you. They kill people.
I'd rather fight an ostrich.
You would have a better chance.
Yeah, I know. Because my chances are great against an ostrich. I already know what to do. I know how to
like 2%. Handle him.
And I would get him.
So that's one is a saber-toothed otter. I thought that was neat. So yeah. All right. Let's talk about the elephant in the room.
Let's hear it.
It's an elephant.
A pachyderm?
Yeah, that's one thought is it was like there was a lot of really, really weird one-off pachyderms, elephants, you know, with bottom tusk and aquatic and stuff like that. I don't really think that is, but some people put that out there.
Mekelle Mbembe's cousin.
No, Mekelle Mbembe was a rhino.
No, oh, come on. He's a water elephant.
Water rhino.
Water rhino elephant.
Because we talked about if we were accurate, if we were right, you know, a Paraceratherium.
I think that is what Mekelle Mbembe is.
Which would be a rhino.
A rhino cousin, yeah.
So one thought, though, is these are just walruses.
Just plain old walruses.
So walruses are incredibly rare outside of Arctic and Antarctic environments. They like cold regions. Or, I'm sorry, the Arctic. They don't go into Antarctic. They're just in the Arctic.
Okay.
And then subarctic, too. They inhabit the Northern Hemisphere, specifically the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. There's two main subspecies, obviously the Atlantic walrus and Pacific walrus. They're both adapted for cold, icy environments and are typically not found in warmer climates like those in Africa. In Central Africa, though, there are mysterious cave paintings of walrus-like beast. So one thought is that there was a walrus, like every once in a while, and we know this about elephants, seals, and walruses, they end up in places they aren't supposed to be.
Okay.
Walruses are typically molluscivores.
Meaning they eat?
Mussels, yeah. Clams, shellfish. It has been documented walrus killing animals like seals and small whales.
Mm-hmm.
And letting them rot a little bit so they could suck on them and eat them.
Ugh.
Because they're just, their jaws aren't designed for that.
Ugh.
But in times of stress and stuff like that, there have been witnessed those kind of events.
You'll do what you can to survive.
So some of this stuff talking about this, of killing animals and dragging them back into the water with the jungle walrus.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a chance that these are walruses. Or so there's two kind of ideas with this. That there is a group of walruses, a species, was more designed for warmer climates. It would randomly go up the Congo.
Mm-hmm.
We know walruses will do this in colder environments. They'll randomly go up rivers and stuff like that. They can be very aggressive towards each other, towards other animals. Whether they kill for food or not is questionable for this kind of idea. But them killing other large animals, they do that.
Right?
They're kind of nasty to be around as far as another animal running into them.
Okay.
And that's a lot of the big seals are kind of like that. When you look at elephant seals and stuff like that, they'll grab and kill everything.
They're mass, so massive.
They're just mad.
Even penguins, they'll snatch them right out of their holes and
just crush them.
Crush them.
And they won't even eat them. They just want to kill them.
Yeah.
So that's one thought, is that either it's an Arctic visitor every once in a while, or there is a subspecies or its own species of walrus like seal that used to live in more tropical environments and their population was greatly reduced and there's just a couple of them left.
Gotcha.
Or not even a couple, but a much more reduced population. So that's kind of one of the thoughts with walruses.
Well, I mean, I guess you can't rule it out. What if there was just like a tropical walrus species that's gone?
Now, the pushback on this idea is the tails that are described the jungle walrus having.
Yeah.
Even the art depicts it as having a large fluked tail.
Yeah.
And four separate legs.
Right.
Walruses don't have that.
Oh, okay.
No seal has that. No sea lion has that.
Well, yeah, but also none of them are living in Africa.
No, there's seals in Africa.
No. Well, no walruses.
Okay.
What if the walruses in the African river system still had their legs, like their feet and their...
No prehistoric walrus had big tail. There's just no sign of anything having such a, like, walruses, seals, sea lions, having a fluked or large tail, like that of an otter, a beaver, or even a whale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, beaver. We didn't even talk about Castoroides.
Which they didn't have. They had a small tail relatively to their body size.
Oh, really? They didn't have the big old beaver
like a,
tail?
Yeah. They, no.
Huh. Okay. But they had, what if their big old buck teeth were mistaken as tusks?
I could see that because, that would be scary.
Big, curved, toothy.
So that's my pushback for the walrus idea, is that they just didn't have big tails.
Yeah.
Like, that is a notable feature. But as far as scales and fur, like, walruses shed their fur, and it can look like big clumps of skin or manes,
like being,
or even scales.
Like being lofted off. Or,
yeah. But it can look like patches of scales all over their back.
Okay.
Because it's the inner layer starting to come out. They're the right color because a lot of them were described as being red or brown, and like spotted or striped. That once again could be them shedding that layer of fur,
gotcha,
causing these patterns. So there is a lot that could point to them being an occasional visitor.
Okay,
but there's a lot that also points away from it too.
Okay, so what is it? Come on, just what is it? We're all biting at it.
I'm just giving you all the ideas.
I know.
So we already mentioned this cat several times.
Oh yeah, the Homotherium.
Homotherium.
Which we did an episode on them, right? Oh, is it Freaky Fauna Friday,
so,
maybe?
Homotherium's popped up a couple times.
Yeah.
With the monsters that made us.
Ah.
Because Homotherium, Africa, they just went extinct. By that, I mean 12,000 years ago.
Yeah, was that a season opener or a season finale kind of thing?
That may have been a season opener. It was not a finale.
Either way, it's a good episode.
But 500 pounds. They were big cats. I mean, comparable to size. They weren't like Smilodons where they're just these big, massive things. They had shorter canines than a Smilodon, but they still had big, long canines.
Mm.
So that's kind of something against it that, like, this creature is described as having, like, exaggerated canines like that of a Smilodon. So when you think of a saber-toothed cat, like, that's a huge group of animals.
Mm.
That's many species of cat. That, and most of, like, some, there's like groups that aren't related. They just co-evolved that.
Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smilodon, though, is the one you think of. When you think of the big brute with the really long canines, that's Smilodon.
That's the big that's
when
big
you
boy.
When you say a saber-toothed cat,
yeah,
the people mean Smilodon. That's the animal they're talking about. So Homotherium was a lot smaller than Smilodon. Not small, but smaller than Smilodon.
Yeah.
And had shorter canines. But it was all over Africa at this time. They were big. They had the canines. They had short. They had a very short tail, though. They were the right kind of color. They were found all the way from Siberia all the way into Africa.
Okay. Quite the range.
They were famous for taking, they were very, very well at adapted to taking down extremely large prey. Antelopes, equine, bovid, and even juvenile mammoths in a lot of their open habitats. So they were very good at handling elephant-sized animals.
So they fit the niche for this creature.
While they probably did not have pack-like hunting or pride-like hunting that modern-day lions do, they did probably have more loose group of cooperative hunters.
Okay.
So somewhere in between. Where it's not like a lion today, where it's, you know, these big groups.
Yeah.
But it's not solitary hunting either.
Full-on solo, one-man army, Arnold Schwarzenegger style.
You see it more like in like cave lion depictions, where it's probably four or five animals.
Okay.
Where it's probably one male and then his direct harem and probably his kids.
What if a Homotherium crossbred with a Smilodon and that had a hybrid vigor, Smilotherium that lives in the river systems and eats hippos?
So the hair, the mane, the attitude, the tusk, all kind of fit. So here's the thing is I think it would. So Smilodon are really dense. So they would not swim around very easily. I'm not saying they couldn't swim. I do think, though, so like hippos are very densely boned animals.
Right.
I could be like a hippo where they're running more along the bottom, or a tapir where they're running along the bottom in completely murky water, and that's how they're traveling and hunting. So this could be an adaptation, like we already talked about, with competition, where they're moving into the water environments. They may not be hunting fish or anything like that, like Hoovelman thought, but moving around hunting hippos, small elephants, because there's African bush elephants. Like Homotherium was hunting those sized animals.
Okay.
In loose, like tiny groups.
Yeah, yeah.
And Homotherium was, like we talked about in that episode, a famous people eater.
Yeah, they're scary.
Like they were one of the monsters that formed why humans are scared of big cats. Like this fear, this relationship we had with them. Homotheriums loved eating people. So this could be why, like a lot of these cultures that may be still dealing with a modern day Homotherium have these kind of stories, like this reverence around them.
Yeah.
Of you don't go near that thing. It will murder you.
Yes.
And it, but there's, you know,
a fear response.
But they're talking about it, like lions and stuff like that. But the big pushback with this again is the tail. It is not a perfect fit. If you look at the depictions, the artists, even like the paleographs.
Yeah.
It does not look like a cat. It looks more like a walrus with a whale's tail and short legs. So, but like, again, there's a lot of these names have cat associated with them. And the drawing does the same thing we talked about with the cat name. Is it drawn like a whale or a walrus because it looked like that? Or is it drawn like that because it had aquatic features?
Right. Like the ones we talked about, if it was flying, they drew it with wings or feathers.
And it may not have been feathered, like a bat. Like a lot of some of the depictions of bats had feathers.
Yeah.
To show you that they could fly. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, I really don't know which way it is. So that's a pushback, though, I have on that idea.
The only way to know is you'd have to get into the mind of the artist and the culture of the time and, you know, break that down and really analyze their cave paintings for what they really mean. It sounds like, imagine that, though, like back in the day, like cave painting art class, and they're like, you got the professor up there pointing at this cave painting. He's like, you know, so what does this mean? You know, it's like four guys spearing a mastodon to death. Well, you know, the way they're angled, the way the trunk of the mastodon is facing really means that's just modern BS interpretation bullcrap. But it'd be funny back in the day.
All right. Now, what have I told you? I've been playing around with you this whole time. None of these things matter. Because I found out what this creature actually is.
Okay, this is what we're all been waiting for. This jungle walrus.
What have I told you? There was an animal that has a fluke tail
Okay.
4 stubby clawed feet.
Okay.
A walrus or whale-like head with 2 long downward-facing tusks.
So something that fits the bill, pretty much, is what you're saying.
Something that is the same exact animal.
Oh. All right.
What if I told you there was that?
All right, let's hear it. Let's hear it, because I don't think I've ever heard of this thing. And I'm going to Google it immediately when you say it.
So, Odo Beno Ceratops.
Odo Beno Cerat.
ODOBENOCETOP.
Odo Beno Ceratops.
That's what I just said.
Yes.
I.
Odo Ben. Ocetops. Odo Ben Ocetops. There we go. There we go. I think we've said it enough that you guys can Google it at
home.
Now
I can't say it right. But yeah, you pulling this up?
Yeah, I mean, it looks like a big walrus.
With legs and a whale tail.
Now the legs.
Now it depends on which one you're looking at. There's many species of this creature.
Okay.
That's kind of that's the group.
Ah, gotcha. Okay.
So it's a distinct genus of small toothed whale known from Chile and Peru. Its fossils are found in the Miocene Age marine strata there. 2 species have been observed so far, O. peruvius and O. lapthodont.
Oh, boy.
These are known for their asymmetrical skulls, which have pronounced processed of their premaxillas, and they have giant sheaths over their tusk. These tusks are thought to be sexually dimorphic, but we really don't know that yet because we don't have a lot of these fossils.
Mm.
The holotype has elongated tusk that is broken. It seemed to be pierced into another animal. So right now, we don't know a lot about these guys. We have very little. But the one tusk we have a really good example of is 4.5 feet long.
Holy cow.
So they had some of the biggest tusks.
It's taller than me.
These are basically, their closest living relatives are narwhals, they evolved independently. They both have tusks separately.
Okay.
So they're not directly related, but they're from like the same overall group. So these had 4 stubby legs, and they had a whale tail. They were thought to be shallow water, like environmentalists. Like they lived in waters they could kind of run on. They were kind of in between. Like I said, we don't know a lot about these guys. We have very little fossils.
Well, you know how you Google something, and it says like, you know, people also search for.
Mm-hmm.
It just brought up this whole list of whole bunch of stuff I've never even
so this is a
heard of.
Yeah, this is a part. And there may be other ones found.
Today?
Across the world.
Oh, okay.
Like I said, these guys are really rare in the fossil record.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're ocean creatures. Or
fresh
water.
We think they may have been fresh water.
That's right.
And they had binocular vision, which is very odd for it. There's a lot of oddness about these creatures.
Mm.
But they don't have a melon like their sister taxa. So the melon is like a beluga whale or a narwhal's, that big jelly thing in their head. That's called a melon.
The forehead little bump thing.
Yeah, that's called a melon.
Okay.
They didn't have that. They seem to be kind of aggressive. Now, we don't know really what they were eating. The main thought is that they were sifting like a modern-day walrus and getting mussels and clams and any bivalves.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people that think it may have been predatory.
Okay.
So it may be eating meat.
Okay.
Either way, we don't know. Some of the tusks we found, they seem to be broken off from fighting. We don't know if they're fighting each other, if they're fighting other large animals. We really don't know how big they got. It's just, these are an animal, like, have you find any that, like, any of the artist depictions that look like what I'm talking about?
I mean, here, let me go back and through. There's some,
where they have the legs. Some of them are drawn more like whales, and some of them have, like, the legs.
Yeah, I mean, some of them they draw, like, even, like, whales, some are like straight up walrus shaped looking things with the little fins and the mm-hmm. fluke tail. I mean, they got the whole little range when you Google them.
And so we really don't know. Like I said, there are some that they look like they still have their hip girdles.
Hmm.
So they still had back legs exposed.
I mean, so they're mammals, right?
Yeah, they're whales.
Okay.
So I kind of led you, with Ambulocetus.
Yeah.
This is kind of a whole different thing.
Yeah, this is a whole different. It's kind of neat. I'm just scrolling through the images and on the Googles and seeing these guys because I've never even. They were another one that's never been on the radar.
They belong to a whole group of animals that we just have pieces of.
What I'm seeing right here, that we didn't know about really until relatively recently.
Yeah.
Like it's something newer on the scale of things of animals that have went extinct in the Earth's history.
Well, like I said, some of the tusks of these guys are massive.
Yeah, that's what's wild.
Being 1.5 meters long. But we really don't know how big these guys were. We think, like I said, that they were suction feeding molluscivores, so, you know, eating bivalves off the ocean and river floors. We don't know if they were exclusively freshwater, exclusively saltwater. They're kind of found in a weird spot. It looks like they were ocean animals, but there's some evidence suggesting that they were freshwater, like going into rivers.
Yeah.
And using these environments.
Well, just like our seals and walruses today.
They may have even more so.
Yeah.
Where they're going in there specifically to feed.
Gotcha.
Where, a walrus or a seal is more occasional.
Yeah, we don't know. The ocean's the most unexplored, second most unexplored biome on the Earth, and then just underwater in general.
Oh, the atmosphere.
The atmosphere, I'm like,
what are you talking about? What's the most unexplored? No, the atmosphere.
Haven't you read the book? You read the book?
I actually probably haven't.
I did, like, 8 times in the beginning. we don't know. And then with river systems, I mean, rivers bury stuff every day. Stuff's getting buried. Rivers move and things. I remember reading this story 4 or 5 years ago. They discovered a temple in India that they didn't know was there. And it was just buried in a sand dune because the river shifted 100 years ago and buried it. And people forgot about it. And there it still is. They just dug it up and like, oh, yeah. Wow.
So Odobenceratops. We think... Like I said, we don't know a lot about them, but right now body estimates are 13 to 18 feet long. Has anything else been 13 to 18 feet long?
What, this thing?
The jungle walrus.
Yeah, the jungle walrus we've just been talking about?
Yeah. It's around 2,000 pounds, which would be right there. Like I said, a lot of the ones we have broken tusk. We just don't know whether they were doing this, like fighting each other, or if their feeding strategies were breaking their tusk.
Yeah.
Or if they were just, like, they could be aggressive like hippos and just hitting other animals with them. They typically did only have one tusk, as far as we know right now, like a narwhal, where they had a second one inside their skull still.
That's what it looks like a lot of these pictures. There's, like, one really long one and then one,
like a short one. It's normally shorter. Exposed.
Yeah.
But it's normally not, like, long.
So weird.
And like I said, the artist depictions of these things, they're artist depictions, right?
Yeah.
So they're highly stylized. But there's people that draw them very much like seals. There's people that draw them very much like whales. And there's people, they look like they had 4 legs. So if you look at that first drawing of the jungle walrus, that pictograph.
Yeah.
And just compared it to these things, it's like the same animal.
Mm.
If you look at like the black and white drawings, like just that and put it up there.
Yeah.
It's the same animal. It's the same silhouette.
Okay.
It's the same.
Like, could that be just, it is that animal, or could it be a convergent
thing? That.
Yeah.
It could be either that. So these guys, I mean, we just don't know a lot about them. We really just don't. And they are from the same time as Leviathan and multiple sperm whale species. Yeah. And like, there's just.
Well, it'd be nice too, if they would have gave it a name that you can actually easily pronounce so people can understand and learn about these things.
Odobenceratops.
Yeah.
That's how you say it.
Ceratops. But it's not ceratops. That's dinosaurs. It's cetops or citops. Benositops.
Ceratops.
It's a little different. There's an R and other things in there. You know, these letters, they actually have meaning.
Mm.
You know, I know when you put them on there.
Odobenceratops.
I don't know. I think you shove letters in there that form the shape of the word, and then you're done.
Mm-hmm. That's how it is.
I know. I've translated your work for years.
It's really the last 2 decades we've really even started to look into these guys.
Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. It's just from my 5-second research, it's relatively new.
So that's one of the thoughts I had, is that maybe there's like a species, even like going back to the, I just forgot the name of it, the Alaskan one. The creature.
The Akhlut.
Where we talked about that with maybe there's an ocean animal like what we talked about that with the, I forgot the other thing.
The wolf whale?
Yeah. Where it was coming on land every once in a while, or coming in river every once in a while and feeding and following seasonal feeding patterns. Yeah. And because crocodiles do this in the Congo. We've talked about that. Like the man eaters and stuff like that. They'll go in and they'll spend like a year or two in there, and then they'll go back out into the ocean and move somewhere else.
Yeah.
So I wonder if these guys are doing something similar. If there is, if the Odoceatops, or however you say it, Benosetops. Benosetops.
There you go.
Goes in and out. Like, there's a four-legged, webbed. I don't think they're on land very often. Like, I think they're more like a seal.
Like, moving from body to body.
Yeah, or they can kind of prop themselves up and drag themselves around.
Yeah.
Like a walrus, where if you, like, a walrus with a whale's tail is kind of what this creature is. Both, you know, the creature and Odobenosetops.
Odobenosetops.
But, it really looks like the drawings. It really does. Yeah. And the other thought is...
You've done it again.
So that's one I was really proud of. But, it could just be a wholly undiscovered thing.
Yeah.
So those are my two top ones. This is either an animal that may not fit any modern day lineage that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
It may not be any known animal. If it's going to exist anywhere, the Congo is just as good a place as any of having a large undiscovered mammal. Because it seems to be a mammal, even if it maybe has plates, maybe not. I don't know. I do not think it's a big cat. I really just don't.
Or it could just be like all big hoax from the Congo snake salesman that, you know, writes up all these articles on clay tablets and sells the stories to you.
It was just a guy telling like the what gonna get you stories.
Yeah.
8,000 years ago and drew a picture of it.
Right. Yeah.
These are the gonna get yous.
Oh, man. And then we translate it years later. Like, look at this fact. They wrote it on the cave.
This is going to get a really skinny guy and a really fat white guy. We're going to talk about this for 3 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you had to pick one, what are you going to pick?
I mean, I think this Odobenosetops thing kind of fits the bill the best. If not, giant salamander. I'm just kidding about that. I don't know where this thing is the only thing that like comes close.
Oh, I did miss one. It's not one I really believe, but people have suggested like a Caprosuchus.
Oh, like a big like croc type.
So yeah, they were limbed like tall crocs. They had the big cane and teeth.
What was that one land croc we talked?
Briannosuchus.
Briannosuchus, yeah,
That was like a dragon.
Yeah, land dragon.
So that's one thought. I don't buy it personally because it just seems to have too many mammalian characteristics.
Yeah, but it's good to note. It's good to part. Yeah. It could be part of the puzzle.
I think I'm there too. I think this is either an undiscovered animal. It's not a walrus. It's not anything else. It just happens to have convergent characteristics.
Yeah.
Or it's like a either more basal or more derived Odobenosetops.
Okay.
Those are my two that I would go in.
Yeah. What if it's more specialized one that ended up in that river system and they became the apex predator?
Well, let us know what you think in the comments below.
Yeah.
Well, I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been J Clone 1977.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
Yeah! Whoa! I'm okay!
Hey, do you love adventure? Do you love outdoor sports? Would you like to learn more and hear from amazing adventure athletes from all over the world? If so, then check out the Adventure Sports Podcast. We've been the premier platform for sharing adventure for more than 10 years now. We help you get your adventure on. Look for the Adventure Sports Podcast wherever you find your podcasts. Get out there and have some fun.